Welcome to another Astros podcast.
Welcome back to Astro Launch, everybody. This is Steve Sparks, and my special guest today is 9-year Major League veteran pitcher, 7 years with the Baltimore Orioles, 2 years with the Milwaukee Brewers. It's Ben McDonald, who was the first pick in the entire draft, 1989. And Ben, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about when you signed, because Carlos Correa, obviously, was the first pick in the draft as well, and you felt a little bit of that pressure, didn't you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, anytime you're the number one pick in the country, like Carlos is and like I was, you feel like you need to go out there and earn that every day. And sometimes it can be a good thing, and sometimes it can be a bad thing. For me, I think it put a little extra pressure on myself, and my contract situation put more pressure on myself, too, because you got to remember, going back to 89, I was the first amateur player ever to get a multi-year guaranteed contract from an amateur status. So I got a 3-year guaranteed contract. It took a long time to get it done. It was August the 19th before I finally signed in 1989. And then, of course, I was in the big league September the 1st. And so, yeah, it took me a while to get adjusted. It took a while for my teammates to accept me because a little animosity there. You know, I came in kind of making as much or more money than some of the guys that were already established in the big leagues, and I'd never thrown a professional pitch yet. And so it took me a while to be accepted by my teammates. But once they realized I was just like them, I was there to try to win ball games just like they were, things finally worked its way out. But there was a process there where I had to earn everyone's trust, I should say.
What was it like when you first stepped into the clubhouse? Were guys not talking to you, or were there a few guys that kind of endeared yourself to you, or how'd it go?
Some of the veteran guys, and I don't pick on Jamie Quirk because I got to be really good friends with Jamie Quirk and Bob Melvin and people like that. But there were some veteran guys that's been around for a little bit, and when I came in doing what I did, you know, the old school thought was, hey, you got to earn your way.
Sure,
to be. And
some
of them felt like I didn't really earn my way. Wasn't my fault, you know. I didn't look at it like that, and I just wanted to be accepted like everybody else. And so, yeah, it took some trust, and so I made sure that I was out working everybody. I was working as hard as I could to earn my spot and stay there. So it took a while. I think some of the younger guys accepted it because they saw, you know, what was starting to come and what would later come, which was a lot of guys getting the multi-year contracts for a lot more money. You know, but it's just a process, I think, that you go through, and it took me a little bit. It was a little bit frustrating for me because of that, but it all came with it. And when you become a professional player, as you know, the money's part of it. And, you know, not so much anymore. I think it's more accepted now. And I think first picks, maybe not quite as much pressure on them what we used to have years ago. But it's still a tough thing when you're a 1-1, because a 1-1 is a guy that's supposed to be a franchise player. It's supposed to be a guy that plays 10 or more years in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a lot of pressure being a 1-1.
What was the Olympics like? You were on that 1988 Olympics team, Seoul, South Korea.
Yeah.
Was that experience just as crazy as it sounds?
It really was, for a lot of different – first of all, I'm a huge – fan of the Olympics. I love it. I watch it all the time when it comes on. I was the guy as a kid that would watch the Olympics and always wanted to get on that podium. And, and I always tell people that's probably all the things I was lucky enough to be a part of and accomplish in college and pro ball. That's probably still my number one favorite thing, is stepping up on that podium where our whole team got to step up. And then when they drape that gold medal over your neck, it's really, I don't know, it's and I still get goosebumps thinking about it today. It's just a, you know, when you're wearing the red, white, and blue, man, they
it's
put
a pride.
It's a pride thing. And you hear the national anthem played in a foreign country, man, it means a lot to me. And it's still today, you know, that medal means a lot in the jersey that I wore. And so it's a lot of pride that goes along with that. I was fortunate. It was a really tough summer. I mean, we went to Japan twice. We were in Italy for the World, and finally ended up in Seoul, South Korea, alone to go to a U.S. tour even before that. So
that was 60 games.
60
right?
game schedule. Wow. It was a lot of games. You know, I ended up I threw 80 innings that summer.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, it tells you there it was a long schedule. So it was good, and I met some great guys. Kind of helped prepare me a little bit for pro ball. And of course, you win a gold medal. That's something they can't ever take from you.
Yep. Last thing with Ben McDonald. You do a lot of SEC work, and you've seen a couple of infielders for the Astros.
Oh, yeah.
A.J. Reed, who was at Kentucky, so you saw him come through and play at LSU. And you also saw Alex Bregman a lot. And you're a big fan, aren't you?
I am. I mean, A.J. Reed, you know, won the Golden Spikes Award over at Kentucky, and he's a heck of a ball player. You know, he was a pitcher. He pitched on Friday nights in the SEC, and then he swung the heck out of it the next 2 days over at first base. He's a big old guy with some pop, and I like him. I think he's going to be around. I really think Alex Bregman's a special player. As you know, you're starting to see a little bit of him. I saw him. I knew the first day he stepped on campus as a true freshman. He walked right in and played shortstop at LSU, which is one of the toughest positions to walk in and play. Had type A personality. He's just a gamer. You know, he goes, he takes the extra base like he did last night. Not many guys go and get a double out of that ball he hit in the gap last night, but he made it in there and he scores. And so that's the kind of player he is. He's you know, a gym nut, if that's what you want to call him. He's a gym rat. I mean, he's here early. He stays late. He'll take more BP than anybody. And so I think the Astros are fortunate to have him. I think he's going to have a really, really good career.
Well, that's Ben McDonald. Ben, it's always great to catch up with you, and continued success in your broadcasting career.
Thanks, Sparky. Good to see you again, man.
The following Minute of Astros History featuring Larry Durker is brought to you by Minute Maid. Minute Maid, put good in, get good out. Here's Dirk.
You never know what you'll see when you go out to the ballpark. I'm sure no one in the crowd of 20,000 at Pro Players Park in Miami expected to see everything that happened in this 16-inning game that was played in 1999. First, the Astros set a National League record by drawing 17 walks, six of them to Jeff Bagwell. On the other side, the Astros struck out 21 times. The game was tied 4-4 after 9 innings. One of the runs came on a solo shot by Ken Caminiti in the third inning. The bullpens held fast, and no more runs scored until the 16th, when Caminiti hit another solo homer and Tim Bogar added a sacrifice fly. Somehow, I still had Billy Wagner available, and though he struggled, he got the last out for his 31st save.
Thanks, Dirk. Minute Maid believes that whether it's families or juice, when you put good in, you get good out. That's why you can count on Minute Maid to deliver delicious, refreshing goodness in every sip. Minute Maid, put good in, get good out.
Welcome back. Robert Ford joined by Rich Dower, Astros first base coach and infield coach. And you're back in Baltimore where you played for 10 years, 76 to 85. And before the first game of this series on Thursday, they had a nice tribute to you on the scoreboard with some highlights from your playing career and showed you on the video board and got to tip your cap to the crowd. That had to be a pretty neat moment for you.
Yeah, it's the first time they've done something like that. I've been back a few, but they didn't do it last year, and I hadn't been back for quite a while. And, you know, it's obviously a special place. You know, I grew up here, had my kids here, and the fans have always been great. The Orioles are a class organization. They do everything first class, and I'm glad they did it. It sure makes you feel good and appreciated.
You spent your entire career as a player with the Orioles. You were drafted by them, made your big league debut with them, and played your entire big league career in an Orioles uniform. 1976, you get called up. First of all, how did you find out, and what was that moment like, those first moments for you in the big leagues?
Well, we were in the playoffs. We had a Triple A team that was like 50 some games over 500, and it was six of us actually called up. So we knew we were going up, but we had to stay and make the playoffs. So it was kind of like we wanted to win the playoffs, but we also wanted to get out and get up to the big leagues. And it's exciting. It really is. It's a dream come true. You know, when you're in college, you just, you know, pray for the chance to be able to put on a pro uniform, and then you finally get into the pros and you say, man, you know, this guy made it, that guy made it, I can play with them, and, you know, maybe someday I'll make it. And actually, probably for me, it was a tremendous opportunity to play with the Orioles because they were a veteran team with a bunch of pretty good players and pitchers, and they could put me out at second base and I didn't really have to do a lot.
What was there a particular moment, particular season where you felt like, all right, I'm a big leaguer, I know I belong here? Because there's that period when you think you belong, but you don't really know. But was there a time when you knew that you belong?
Well, I think in 79, all those six rookies were now maybe more rookies that were a couple-year veterans. And we went down to the wire and chasing New York and battling the Red Sox. You know, and then where every play and every pitch becomes important, and even no matter if you're 4 for 4 or 0 for 5, you know, you got to do something to help the team win. And it was the relationships I had with all those guys. I played with them for 10 years, and things like that don't happen a lot anymore, you know, because we kind of grew up in Double A, Triple A, and then 10 years in the big leagues together. It's just so special. And then when you win a World Series in 83, it was put the icing on the cake.
Now, your manager for most of your career was Hall of Famer Earl Weaver. One of the numbers that the Orioles have retired here, and Earl had quite the reputation. When you think about Earl Weaver, what comes to mind?
Well, as a player, he wasn't really the best guy to play for, you know, as far as how he made you feel. I mean, he could get on you pretty good, and but you know, it was maybe it was a driving factor or whatever. But now that I've got like 33 years of coaching, I would assume what I've learned and everything I've done, I learned from him. So maybe he was obviously doing me a great favor getting on me as a player. I mean, he was one of those guys you love to hate. I mean, he was real tough on you, and he expected perfection, and on a lot of those teams, he got it.
He was ahead of his time a little bit. I know he was one of the first managers to really look at matchups and try and maximize those things, but he really was at the forefront of a lot of things that we kind of take for granted now with managers, right?
He probably was the first. I mean, I remember in the 1979 World Series, I played 161 games during the season. One game got rained out. We're in the World Series, and Bruce Keeson is starting pitcher for the Pirates, and I'm not in the lineup. I just played 161 games, and you know what? So I went in there, and I'm, you know, one thing Earl did was he said the door's always open, but just don't expect whatever I say to be, you know, be happy about it. So I went in there, and I'm going, what is going on? And he goes, well, look. Says you're 0-for-2 with the strikeout, and Billy Smith's 1-for-2 with a home run. So I got statted out in 1979.
Nowadays that'd be a lot more commonplace. Rich Dower, thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Miley facing the Astros for the first time as an Oriole, but for the third time this year. 3-1. And Springer drives this pretty deep to right center field. Racing back now is Trumbo looking up, and that's gone. A leadoff home run for George Springer. And the Astros lead it 1-0.
Well, it's so big when George jump-starts this team. Such a big weapon for the Astros at the top of the order, being able to get him on board early. And a great swing, finally got a 3-1 fastball that he could drive the other way.
And Colin McHugh delivers his first pitch. And Jones lines it to left field. Going back on it and looking up is Gonzalez, and that's gone into the first row. And after the Astros hit a leadoff home run in the top of the first by Springer, Adam Jones returns the favor in the bottom of the first, and we're tied at 1. Jones with his 24th of the year. Kim off first, the 3-1. And that's hit in the air pretty deep to center field. Going back on it is Hernandez at the wall. He leaps, and that ball is gone. A two-run home run for Manny Machado, and it's 3-1 Orioles. Games tonight starting to look a lot like last night's game.
Boy, does it ever. Orioles with 6 home runs in last night's game, 2 already here in the first inning, still nobody out.
First pitch to Chris Davis, and Davis drills that deep to right field. You got to be kidding me. Out in the right center, almost made it onto Utah Street. 4 batters faced by Colin McHugh, all of them have reached, 3 of them with homers, and Davis hits his 28th of the year. Orioles lead it 4-1.
Third game in a row now for Chris Davis, including 2 in yesterday, so that's 4 home runs in his last 3 games. He's heating up.
Here's the 2-2. And that's hit pretty well and pretty deep to right center field. Hernandez is back at the wall. That's gone. My goodness. That's 3 straight homers for the Orioles. They lead it 5-1. Machado, Davis, and Trumbo all in a row. Jones led off the game with a homer.
Try this on for size. 10 home runs in 9 innings already in this series for the Baltimore Orioles. Everything they touch is leaving the ballpark.
Miley nods in agreement with Wieters. Here comes the 1-2. And that's line down the right field line for another base hit. Scoring is Springer. Bregman around third. He will score. It's a 2-run double for Jose Altuve. And how do you like that? The Astros have taken the lead back. It's 6-5.
That is unbelievable. 35 doubles now for Altuve on a pitch. Had to be 10 inches off that outside corner, and he reached as far as he could, and he lined a shot down the right field line to pick up 2 more.
Bregman wears the sleeves in this weather. 86 degrees at game time. Sleeves all the way down to his wrist. The 1-1.
That's ripped into left center. That's a base hit. That'll score Teoscar, who's tearing around third base. And it's a tie ball game again, 7-7, as Bregman collects his 10th RBI as a major leaguer. He's got 2 tonight.
Runners lead off first and third. Here's a 2-strike pitch. And that's hit off the hands, blooped into shallow right for a base hit. White will score. On his way to third now is Hernandez. And the Astros lead is 9-7. George Springer drives in his second run of the night. First pitch to Altuve. Jose drills this deep to left center field. Kiss it goodbye. A two-run home run for Jose Altuve. And the Astros lead is 11-8. That's home run number 20 on the year for Jose.
That's a career high for Jose. Last homer came on August 1st against Marcus Stroman. And that's a big moment for Jose.
And this is one of the craziest games I've ever seen.
I mean, the Orioles hit back-to-back-to-back home runs in the first. Machado, Davis, and Trumbo.
First team in 115 years to have four homers before recording an out.
1-0. Machado lifts this in the air to right center. Springer and Hernandez racing over. Hernandez is there, makes the catch on the jog, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros in their five-game skid as they take one from the Baltimore Orioles tonight by a final of 15-8.
The Houston Astros.
Swing and a miss! Mike Fiers has done it! A no-hitter!
On your radio.
That ball's clobbered. Left field! See ya!
All summer long.
Start spreading the news. The Houston Astros win the AL wildcard game.
The Houston Astros. Radio Network.